Chapter 1. Rex and the Watchers. Rex hit the red button. Oh, crap, I wish this insane world would wake up. The news always made Rex a little on edge, as he knew that a simple remedy would solve all the world's problems, but it all seemed so impossible. Rex was a dreamer and seriously believed in higher intelligences and other worlds that have idyllic societies and, well, to put it simply, had attained peaceful coexistence. Planets in total harmony, though Earth seemed to be getting further away from his dream of becoming one of them. Yes, them. Rex was convinced that they watch us and would have loved to have us as part of their endless planetary communities. But there always seems to be a but, thinks Rex. Still being an idealist and a dreamer to boot, he saw the good that man was capable of. I'm not talking goody-two-shoes kind of good, no. Just the simple love and respect a fellow man can have for a person who is a bit down in his luck. We see it more rarely these days. Sometimes it even hits the news. It can be a light in a darkened world when there is too much bad news. Still, Rex would talk to these fellow alien sympathizers. Hey, watchers, what do you say to a little fun here on this dreary day? The winter was setting in and Rex knew all too well how his neighbour would turn up the volume to his noisemaker, just to block out the thoughts of another winter, of limited heating in his not-so-new building complex. Hey, watchers, what do you say to a little stirring of the pot? Winked Rex, as he peered into a rain-swept window. Little did he know, but his 10,000th attempt to arouse the brother aliens was about to pay off. A council was held before he asked for the umpteenth time to give him teleport power. A council to bring Earth into its final days before they would invade. Pods from many distant galaxies had gathered at a golden planet just 200 light years from our blue world. Yes, living ships. Before the first billionth year of intelligent life, machines were obsolete and biological machines were vastly better. They were so brilliantly developed that a super biological body was now the main vehicle for carrying the antimatter counterpart of a being that was safely locked away in the next dimension to possess. Beings like gods assembled to discuss the fate of the Earth and how it could be saved from total annihilation, or cleansed, as they put it. Yuar came out with a simple solution. Rex. Yes, Rex. Let's use that insignificant mortal and see what can be saved from that doomed planet, Yuar, the king, suggested. 23 of the other kings, encircled on majestic thrones, looked deep into Yuar's heart, and some even broke out into roars of laughter. Yuar kept his stare in resolute toward the few that thought this too humorous to put into play. Taken back, they said with a soft tone. Yes, but. Yuar laughed. Yes, but it might work. Though these immortals have extraordinary powers moving from one dimension to another, and they could predict the future to a point, the fact was that some variables made it impossible to say such and such would happen, and nothing can change such and such, the main variable being love. It was the spanner that changed the cogs of time and its consequences. As Yuar had finalized the meeting, they all bowed their heads to hear from the power. All 24 projected their minds to one central spot as a beam of pure light rippled and crackled with energy. A form spoke, "Protect the balance, children." With this confirmation, Yuar had convinced the council. And in a heartbeat, all the kings were already back on their home worlds, popping from one dimension to another and enjoying their simple lives. When Yuar sent a watcher to appear before Rex and grant him his one wish. Rex! Softly came a pleasant voice from the midst of the crowded living room. Rex just about fell from his chair and yelled out, "Holy shit!" A mist began to form in his lounge. A relaxed but serious young man looked straight into Rex's eyes and repeated, "Rex, hello, I'm Rabashak, said the godlike alien that looked very similar to an ancient ruler. Rex regained his composure and greeted Ravishak. Rex was moving in position to prostrate himself. Not being a religious man, but one that was obviously way out of his depth and evidently not quite sure or knowing what he should do, then before he could complete his action, Ravishak signaled him to get up, waving his finger and saying, "No, no, no." Rex felt slightly relaxed, though inside he was raging with emotions. He stammered, "Well, what can I do for you, Ravishak? Well, what can I do to make you feel comfortable? I just knew you guys would visit me. I knew it. Are you a god?" Rex queried. He desperately wanted continuity with his concept of these alien brothers. Ravishak was taken aback. He expected a little more fear. But as you are predicted, mortals have a way about them that does make them worthwhile. "Thank you, Rex. I'm comfortable, and no, the concept god is a mortal one. There is no god who has a magic wand who says presto and out comes a trillion universes and sneezes and a few more come out on top. No, we are what we are, intelligence beyond your understanding, and we have been around forever and we grow worlds. But without any more rhetoric, I must tell you why I'm here." Most watchers did not like to venture into the fourth dimensional plane because there were too many variables and only usually one chance to live through most of them. "We have watched you with great amusement and hope these past years, that as we have laughed with you, we have cried with you, felt a lot of your pain. It has been decreed by the council to bring Earth into the countless worlds that exist in our Federation. We would like to use you as a tool to accomplish this task." A tool, thought Rex. Well, I've been called worse. "I must focus and get the meat of this monumentous encounter with my fellow aliens. I've always felt we were brothers," he mused, as he looked intently at the peaceful-like person in the midst, speaking to him with such authority and certainty. "Would you rather I leave you in peace? Whatever you call this state you're in?" He snapped at him. Wow, that grabbed Rex's attention. Then he blurted out, No, I was simply thinking of the way you would use this tool," pointing to himself. "My mind imagined a gut-wrenching experience." He winced, looking at Ravishak in sheep-like bewilderment. Ravishak looked sympathetically at his frazzled state and answered, "Rex, if we did not think you could do this, we would not have asked you. Besides, it will be another source of amusement for both you and us. So what do you say? We would never force a person against its will, a cliche, I know. But it's common law of our endless worlds," Ravishak quipped, shaking his head. Rex, excited and with all the boldness he could muster up, and without hesitation, stammered, "Well, yeah, of course I will. Sign me up." Not even considering the fine print. The thought of an adventure with the Watchers and to actually be a part of Earth's history, who could refuse? It was a no-brainer. Rex's mind swelled with all sorts of erratic adventures. "Hold on, Rex," said Ravishak, jolting Rex back to reality. "We just need to do a bit of minor surgery on you first. Just readjust your DNA sequencing and open up your frontal lobe to receive the new data it will need to unlock and lock in the two dimensions." Surgery, brain, dimensions. Rex went into panic mode. His eyes widened and a pale, sickly look swept over his entire face. His look changed to a more surreal, "Oh my God, what have I got myself into" kind of look. With a nervous twitch, Rex stuttered, "But of course, genetic surgery. Why not?" Only last week he panicked with the stark reality of donating his blood. He committed to do this many years before, but every month when it came around, he thought of it. It was always a bit hard for him beforehand. Rex had studied anatomy and physiology for many years just for the experience, along with quantum mechanics and many other sciences. It made him feel like he could keep up with his alien brothers if anything ever occurred. Better to be ready and not need it than be caught with your pants down, so to speak, as he's often told his girlfriend. "May I ask what this readjusting of my neural network will do and why the DNA fix-up? You know, I know a little bit about this stuff, Ravishak," Rex stated. airing his little knowledge with all the bravery of a war vet, though he was still in a state of shock. Rabbishak was so very patient and seemed to enjoy the encounter as it happened. He tucks Rex's shoulder, and Rex for the first time felt these alien brothers were flesh or some sort of flesh. Rabbishak spoke comfortably. "It will make the process permanent." Rex repeated Rabbishak's words wryly. "The process? The unlocking of the two dimensions? Are you talking about quantum entanglement? How an object can be in two places at once?" said Rex, showing off his limited knowledge of quantum theories. "Yes, though what you are doing is untangling the universes in each other. The antimatter quarks entangle first, so they are the first to move into the mirror universe, or their antimatter universe. It is really quite simple when you get into the flow of it, of the process. And crudely put, it's sort of like your fax machines here, but not." Rabbishak answered with a deep look. "Teleportation. You have constantly asked for a teleport machine. Well, we do not have one. We teleport by unlocking subatomic antimatter particles into the next dimension. Then we lock them back into this matter dimension that you live in. This unlocking process is the heart of teleporting and makes teleportation of matter very simple. That even our children can do with ease. Then we will them to enter the fifth dimension, and they obey. I know it sounds strange, Rex, but it works. And then we will them to come back into this fourth dimensional plane, but in a different era, literally, anywhere in the universe." Rex picked himself up from the side of the chair as he steadied his grip, nervously exclaimed, "I knew it was a simple process, but of course, the pieces of the puzzle all fit together perfectly. Oh, I'm so happy, Rabbishak. I still can't for the life of me understand why you would trust me with such power." Rabbishak fixed his eyes intently at Rex and replied, "We don't trust you. If you do the wrong thing, this power will be rescinded." Rex knew all too well what rescinded meant. The dirt nap, punch the clock, kick the bucket, expired. Thought Rex. "Might get a month of fun before I blow it. What the hell? You only live once." "But of course, Rabbishak, I understand. We can't have a planet teleported into the sun, can we now?" Rex let out a fake laugh. "No, Rex, I'm glad we understand each other. The team is prepared, Rex. You'll go to sleep soon, and when you wake up, you'll be on your own again. We cannot stay here, and we cannot help you. This is your planet, a planet of mortals, okay? Bye now, Rex. It was pleasant talking to you." "Feelings mutual," Rex said, as he softly sinks off to sleep. "Your Majesty," Rabbishak bowed as he moved into the court and blurted out a question with a question. "Natulus has arrived and asked for an audience with you. This is most disquieting, my lord, and he will not reveal his purpose." "Why would he come after 400 cycles? Would you like me to put him in the court prison till we discover his intent?" "Rabbishak," "you are," laughed. "You're not still angry over him, over the torture he put you through, are you, huh?" "Your Majesty, you know he can't be trusted, and who knows what he has planned," Rabbishak pleaded, quivering with a slight twitch of a sore nerve, and justifiably. "Natus plotted against Yuar's realm by manipulating Rabbishak's weakness and brought him to his knees. Though Yuar saw it as a great purging and made Rabbishak closer to his heart than ever before. "I summoned him, old friend." "O king, why?" "Do not fear, Rabbishak. This is between him and me. Call it a family gathering." Yuar smiled with a sigh. "Make him comfortable for a day and then send him to me alone on the earth, at the usual mountain meeting spot. I will let you know when," Yuar ordered. Rabbishak bowed as he signals his complete obedience and trust in Yuar's judgment, though he kept his hand close to his protective defensive shield with one eye on Natus. Whenever Natus came into the Royal Crystal City, he was guarded by two destroyers. This was simple protocol because of his obvious rebellion of Uar's rule. He was not permitted to speak to anyone or interact in the city, just simply to appear in the royal court and then be released back outside the city again. The Crystal City is a gigantic pyramid the size of our Earth's moon. It is engineering at its best, with crystal golden walls that encase three levels of living area, each level 500 miles high, with each level supporting its own atmosphere. To look up from one of the mountains on the bottom level, you would swear it had no ceiling. The sky was orange with a blue haze. On the third level, as the cone of the pyramid became more visible, the sky was more of a golden blue glow. The third level was Uar's personal command post and had millions of administrators, ambassadors, and leaders that lived and worked in the upper level, governing the hundreds of millions of Earth-like worlds already flourishing in the Milky Way Federation of our galaxy. This city was one of millions encased cities that existed in the Milky Way galaxy, all with similar designs, all of them under Uar and his city's protection and government. They are autonomous to a point, and like any monarchy overlording a government, they have a self-governing body that dealt with their world's personal needs. This is the way it has been since time began. No one can pinpoint that event because when they try to actuate the event, like the elusive number of pi, it just seems to grow. And hey, wait up, there's another universe just over there. It, time, like matter, has no beginning, and it would seem it also has no end. Like the vacuum of space, infinite. Uar and his royal counterpart simply use the collision of two galaxies as a time reference to a beginning, like our Milky Way galaxy that will collide with the Andromeda galaxy in a few million years from now. This will signal a new beginning and a new galaxy formed, and will be called by another name and everything will be new again. Eloy, who rules the Andromeda galaxy and its unique species of mortals that can fly like birds, is a distant relative to Uar from the royal bloodline, and he often frequents the Crystal City. And likewise, Uar often visits Eloy's golden city too. They have a solid relationship that grows stronger as the eons pass.